The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome to the Insight Meditation Center. We often call our place IMC for short. My name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm one of the two primary teachers here. The other one is a colleague named Andrea Fella. And we've been here for 10 years, and I've done many of these intro classes. It's one of my favorite things to do, is to teach them. And a little bit about my background. I became interested in Buddhism, and particularly Buddhist meditation, when I was about 20. And had a little bit halting beginning, but by the time I was about 22 or 23, I got fairly serious about it. And went and lived at the San Francisco Zen Center for many years, where I was ordained as a Zen priest, Zen monk. And then I went and continued my Zen training in Japan, in monasteries there. And then at some point I went to Southeast Asia and practiced in Thailand and Burma. And in 1988 I came back here to this country and started graduate studies in Buddhist studies. Because you know, what else was there to do after all that? And in 1990, I came to Stanford to do a doctoral study in religious studies and Buddhist studies. And while I started there, I was invited or asked to teach a small meditation group that met in Palo Alto. And I was asked to kind of be the teacher of it. And I was, and that group slowly grew. And over the last 21 years, that group has grown. And then 10 years ago, we moved from Palo Alto here. And then it's continued to grow since then. So here you are. So the primary meditation practice we do is called insight meditation. And it's often known popularly as mindfulness meditation. Some of you might be here because of the way that mindfulness has been adapted into many clinical settings in our culture. We have people, now we have these 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction courses in over hundreds of hospitals in the United States. We have mindfulness-based education, mindfulness in the schools, we have mindfulness in the prisons, we have mindfulness in medicine, we have mindfulness in just about any place you can find it, you'd find mindfulness. In fact, recently I came across a book titled Mindfulness-Based Angry Birds. And those of you who don't have an iPhone, it's an iPhone game that you play on your iPhone or your iPad, but with these angry birds. So I guess it's a good thing to do mindfully. So it's kind of entered into our society in a very big way. But the source of this mindfulness kind of movement in our culture comes from what's called the insight meditation tradition of Buddhism. The Buddhism comes out of Thailand and Burma in particular, a little bit Sri Lanka. It's called Theravadan Buddhism. And one of the characteristics of the way that this insight meditation, the mindfulness has been taught in America from the very beginning, is a concern to be able to offer the power of this meditation practice to people who have no interest in Buddhism. And so not to couch it or contextualize it too much with Buddhism, but in a sense free the practice from its Buddhist context because it's such a powerful practice and offer it to anybody who wants it. And it's in that spirit that I'll be offering it to you during these 6 weeks. I will be using periodically the B word. And so we are a Buddhist center here, Buddhist temple. If that doesn't interest you, I just know, rest assured, that the practice I'm teaching, the core practice, is something that doesn't rely on Buddhism. In fact, it's always been very gratifying to me when people of other religions, or even atheists, find that they learn this practice and they find it very useful. And it supports them even in their religious life because the capacity to be more present, to be more mindful and more attentive to what's happening allows you to do whatever you're going to do better, whether it's Christian prayer or, put the same sentence as Angry Bird, I guess. And so In Buddhism, though, this insight meditation practice that we do is considered to be the key fundamental practice that can take a Buddhist practitioner quite far. It's the practice that's said to lead to enlightenment, to liberation, to spiritual awakening. It's a very powerful practice, but in being powerful, it's also very simple. Maybe because it's simple is what makes it, one of the reasons makes it powerful. In fact, one of the challenges many people have in learning this is most people make it more complicated than it needs to be. And so part of the process of learning it is to learn how simple it can actually be. And at the heart, it's a simple practice of noticing what's happening in the present moment. So that's not particularly Buddhist, right? And it's not Asian or mystical or esoteric. Just notice what's happening in the present moment. And, you know, my mother told me that, Gil, pay attention, growing up. And so maybe I didn't. That's why I had to do this. But what we try to do is to develop that capacity to notice, to be in the present moment, notice what's happening in the present moment, to a heightened degree. Often much higher degree of attentiveness and presence than most people have in their lives, and a higher quality of attention than most people have. Most high people's attention is often quite fragmented, restless, agitated, jumps around a lot. And even if they can be in the present moment, often it's filtered or colored by all kinds of emotions, interpretations, beliefs, reactions to what's going on. And the capacity to actually notice cleanly, to see cleanly or clearly what's happening is quite a, in Buddhism we consider it a revolutionary act, because it's actually quite uncommon. In the clinical settings where mindfulness is brought, it's found that by cultivating a capacity for mindful presence, this just simple ability to be in the present moment and really notice carefully what's happening when you're here, is a very effective way of reducing stress. And for people who have pain, they've also found that it's also very helpful to alleviate pain, or to, not alleviate it perhaps, but to make it a lot easier to cope and deal with pain. A lot of the challenges people have in their life can be handled much more graciously and easily when you've learned the skill of how to be mindful, attentive to what's happening when you're going on, when you're doing it. Now, a friend of mine was teaching this mindfulness-based pain and stress reduction course in a hospital once, and a retired police officer came to take the course. He was a big, tough guy, and he came because he had extremely bad back pain. And the doctors had tried to do all they could to help him, and the pain didn't go away. It was very painful, and he kind of given up. But then he said, I'll go try this mindfulness-based stress reduction stuff, this pain and stress management. And one of the first things he was told in the class was, now, get in the present moment, notice what's happening here and now, and then pay attention to your pain. And he got really angry at my friend, because he had, you know, paying attention to your pain seemed like that was the last thing. He wanted to be free of his pain. To pay attention to it seemed to him like that was going to cause more, you know, he was going to feel it and experience it and feel it more fully. There's a kind of a wonderful, maybe I shouldn't use the word magic, but this wonderful transformation of what difficult experience can be. When we bring a careful, relaxed attentiveness to that experience, where we're no longer tensing or reacting to what's going on. And the same is true for beautiful things, beautiful states of mind. There are a few people that I meet who find it very difficult and comfortable to open to some of the great experiences of love and joy that human beings can experience. And so the mindfulness in that case helps us to open up to it more fully and deeply. And benefit from those things. Some of the best experiences in life happen when we're can only happen in the present moment. They don't happen in our planning, and they don't happen in our remembering, but really here, like friendship and love and joy and playfulness and humor, usually, you know, are here. And so our capacity to be here in a more full and attentive way heightens the capacity for these beautiful things to become more part of our life. So I'll be teaching you, hopefully simply enough, this mindfulness practice. And it's done over 6 weeks. And the instructions are done sequentially. So we build each week on what happened the week before. And in a way, we begin with kind of some of the most obvious parts, simple, obvious parts of our life, which is what we do with our body. So our posture and the breathing. And breath meditation is a time-honored way of relaxing, getting into the present moment, and developing mindfulness. So we start there. And then next week, maybe as you think of these weeks going along, you can think of the weeks that are getting more and more intimate, closer into the heart, maybe, of who you are. And so the next week is a little bit more going into the body, mindfulness of the body, becoming more embodied in the practice of mindfulness. The third week is mindfulness of emotions. So how to bring the simple attentiveness in a useful way to the whole world of our emotions, feelings. The fourth week is how to bring mindfulness to the world of our thinking and thoughts. And it's a very rich area in people's lives, an important area. And it's very interesting what happens when you start bringing mindfulness, attention, to a process which is often quite unconscious or doesn't get much attention. It just kind of happens there automatically. So we bring mindfulness to attention. And then the fifth week, we bring it even closer in to the what in Buddhism sometimes seems kind of like the closer to the essence or the heart of what human being is. In fact, the word for this in Buddhism is heart or mind. It's a synonymous word. And it's the kind of the inner quality of heartfeltness that influences and represents how we relate to this world of ours and to ourselves. So we'll see as we go through it, become clear how we do this. Each week, I pass out a handout, and if you didn't pick it up yet, I think it's over there somewhere. When you leave, you can pick it up. You don't need it now, and it's there. And so that handout kind of reviews a little bit of the instructions and what I've taught, and it also gives some suggestions for how you can practice at home, some exercises in daily life, some exercises in meditation. Because if you practice every day at home, this practice that I teach, the instructions I give, you'll much better be ready for the instructions the following week. It's not required that you practice every week, but it certainly helps. And the assumption maybe is that you're here to either learn to meditate or you're here to learn how to be mindful in your life. And both things can come out of this course. If you're not interested in meditation, what you learn here about mindfulness of the body, emotions, thoughts, and so forth is directly applicable to our ordinary everyday life and conversations at work and whatever we do, and can really bring tremendous benefit to our everyday life as well. But I think it's helpful if you meditate every day. I warn you, and I'll say this again, many people who are new to meditation will find it challenging. And one of the common experiences is when you start feeling it challenging because their mind is so busy, it's going all over the place, is to feel discouraged because your mind's not doing what you want it to do. And people feel like it's too difficult. So I'm just warning you that people often have that reaction, and it's considered to be appropriate to have that kind of response and experience. And given that I want to normalize it so that you don't get discouraged too much. And what you do, one of the first things you learn when you start to meditate is to learn to be patient. And that might be one of the first big learnings, is to be patient with this busy mind of mine. And with time and patience and practice, the mind will settle down and you'll start experiencing the benefits of meditation. The last thing I'll say is kind of the context of what we're doing here is that the approach to offering Buddhist practice at our center is to always offer everything we do here for free, as a gift. And we have this belief or this idea that this kind of mindfulness practice, insight practice, meditation practice, Buddhist practice, functions the best when it's freely given and it's in a field of generosity, of goodwill, and perhaps gratitude. And so everything here at IMC is done freely. But, you know, we have a building and lights and things. So we have these two, this box by the door, and it's sometimes, I think the word donations on it, We often use the word dana, which is a Buddhist word for kind of for donation. And if you're all interested or would like to support us, there's that box there. And there's two slots. One slot is for operations, publishing, costs for a building and lights and newsletter and different things, insurance and things that we've had to pay for. And the other is, it will say teacher, and whoever's teaching for the particular event, that's where you can make a donation to that teacher. So in my case, for example, everyone who works here is kind of like a volunteer. No one gets paid. There's no staff people here who get paid. Everyone's volunteers. And for myself and Andrea Fella, the primary teachers, we don't get any salary. There's no support like that. So this is our primary income, primary livelihood, but it comes from what people, the free will donations that people give. So if you'd like to participate in that system, you're welcome to do that, but you're also welcome not to, as you see fit. But that's just kind of, you should know that's how it's being offered. Now, it's a little bit unusual in our society, perhaps, we like it that way. Okay. So now I've talked for a while. Let's do why don't we do a very brief meditation, just kind of straight out, and then I'll talk more about things like posture and meditation afterwards. So just make yourself comfortable in some nice way in your chair or on the floor. So then, gently close your eyes. And then, take a moment to just feel or acknowledge, register yourself here in this room and in this body of yours. The immediacy of what it feels like to be alive at this moment now. And there's no right or wrong thing to experience. Just feel yourself how it is to be alive and present. Whether, if you're tense or relaxed, it's fine. If you're tired or energized, it's fine, whatever it is. But that point is just to notice how it is. As if it's completely okay to be the way you are. Mind is busy, the mind is quiet, whatever it is. Notice how it is. And then within this body of yours, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And then take a few more long, slow, deep breaths. But now, as you exhale, see if you can relax some of your body, like relax your shoulders. Let them soften a little bit. Soften around them. As you breathe out, see if you can relax the muscles of your face a little bit. And as you breathe out, see if you can soften or relax your belly. So as you breathe out, see if there's places in your body, tension, holding, that you can soften, relax. If you can't relax it, maybe you can soften around it. But don't worry how well you do it. If you can't do it at all, it's enough just to bring the effort to soften around it as you breathe out. And as you breathe out, see also if you can let go of some of your concerns and thoughts that you have. So the thinking mind settles a little bit, relaxes a little bit. letting your breath be normal, breathing in and breathing out, bring your attention to what happens in your body when you're breathing. The movement of your chest, of your belly, your diaphragm. Some people like to put their hands on their belly so they can feel the movement. Some people, as they breathe, will feel the air going in and out through their nostrils. So see if you can, for the next couple of minutes, stay with the rhythm of your breathing, the experience of breathing. If it's hard to do so because your mind is agitated or busy or caught up in something, it's really okay. Be okay with that. Just notice that that's what's going on. Notice it in a gracious way. But even noticing it and acknowledging that's what's happening, see if you can come back into your breathing for a little bit, maybe two breaths. Feel your breathing. We're just going to take another minute or so to sit here quietly. But as you sit this last minute, let yourself be still in your body and see if there's some way that you can be very easy or light or relaxed about whatever is happening for you in the present moment. Whatever it might be, don't change anything, but just feel. Be present. And see if you can have a simple, present attention. And then you can take a deep breath or two, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So that was a very simple beginning, 9-10 minutes. Meditation doesn't have to be much longer than that, though generally in our scene, people often meditate, 30 minutes to 45 minutes, but even 10 minutes can make a big difference. One of the ways it can make a difference is it can be a kind of a high-quality way of checking in with oneself, getting to know what's going on with oneself. It's very easy to be busy in one's life, running around, doing a lot of different things, or very busy distracting oneself, so we don't really know what's going on or not doing anything. One way or other, not be in touch with ourselves. And to actually come to a full stop and close your eyes and just find out what's going on here is a very, very useful thing to do. And it's not uncommon for people to be surprised. To be surprised how much momentum and agitation or worry or, whatever that might be there. And so, but it's a really useful thing. It's as useful, I think, as maybe some time when you've ever had experience of a friend stopping by to check on you, and you just felt for 10 minutes, a person checked in and find out where you were at, how you are, and you felt like someone really cared and was there for a short period of time. So it actually can be quite powerful to stop and care for oneself by just checking in. What's going on here? If what's going on is you're feeling joyful, happy, settled, peaceful, then stopping and checking in with that and appreciating it lets those qualities grow, nourishes them. If what you're feeling is the opposite of that, unsettled in some way, disturbed, distressed, upset, or something, stressed, stopping and paying attention to it is the beginning of a process of coming to a wiser way of being in the world, wiser way of being with ourselves. And one of the wise ways of being is to not keep running away and avoiding what's happening. And it's not attacking oneself for feeling the way you're feeling, judging yourself as being wrong or bad or somehow inadequate, that you should feel upset or depressed or angry or afraid or whatever it might be. And because it's so, people's tendency is so strong to be judging or wanting or not wanting or fixing or manipulating or something with their experience, it's actually a very radical thing to do, to step back and just be present for it in an open, kind way. This is how it is now. Right now I'm peaceful. Right now I'm anxious. And stepping back or just kind of observing it and noticing it and that kind of allowing, accepting away, begins a process of unraveling the stress, unraveling the reactivity that we're often living in. So it requires us being present for what is, but then part of the training of mindfulness is to only be present. Free our, slowly begin the process of freeing ourselves from the judgments, the reactivities, the wanting, the not wanting, the worry, the, you know, all the different extra things we add on top of what our experience is. And that can be done, so checking in with ourselves can take just a couple of minutes and having a higher quality awareness, this is what's going on. It's very helpful in daily life because if you know how you're feeling, sometimes then you can take that into account when you're about to go out and do something. You know, if you're really steamed off at something and really angry and upset, you probably it's not the time to go and talk to your boss about something. Maybe you want to kind of wait until you cool down so you know how you feel, so you know you're not going to say something that you later regret. Or if you're in a particular mood, sometimes you do your friends a great service by warning them. By the way, you should know how I'm feeling. Or if you're feeling a really good states of being, happiness, joy, peace or something, if you're really aware of that, there's a way in which actually you can share that with others in a better way. You can kind of be more open to others, and it's beautiful to kind of meet someone else when you're in a good state. So part of this mindfulness practice is just checking in, finding out where you're at. And we often like to say in an accepting way. So that's the beginning. Then, once you do that, then it's nice to relax a little bit, to actually try to see what you could do, a modicum, not a lot. You don't want to make a big engineering project of relaxing, but to begin a little bit, to see any obvious places that you can soften and relax. So often a common place is the shoulders, shoulder blades, sometimes the chest, the belly. Many people keep their belly tense. And two or three times in a session of meditation, it's good to relax your belly. You don't want to keep doing it over and over again, but you do two or three times, and over time, you'll find your belly gets softer and softer. There's often a lot of tension in the face. Some people carry it in their jaw. Some people around their eyes or their forehead. And so you can just feel that. And then if it's possible, just soften. And I like the word soften rather than relax. Relax is sometimes too challenging. But to soften just means you kind of ease up a little bit around it. You kind of make some space for how you're feeling. So it's a little bit not so claustrophobic or constricted around that place. So first you just notice, you check in with yourself, and then you relax. And then once you do have some basic relaxation, then the meditation switches to being a simple process of observation, of observing what's happening here in the present moment. And because it's hard to stay in the present moment, we're training ourselves to be more and more in the present rather than thinking about the future, remembering the past, was drifting off into fantasy, but to be here in this time, in this place. And so we start training ourselves to be here, which sometimes in Buddhism is called a concentration practice, a centering practice, so that we can look more deeply, more clearly, in a more penetrating way, what's actually going on here in our life? What's actually happening here and now? The quest is to understand ourselves in a deep, thorough, intimate way, in a way that probably you could never have imagined before you've actually done meditation for a while or mindfulness for a while. It's a powerful practice. I like to think of it as an adventure. And you'll discover all kinds of very interesting and fascinating and embarrassing things about yourself in the process. There was someone said, not a Buddhist, but said, self-knowledge is seldom good news. but then someone else said, if you can laugh at yourself, you'll never cease to be humored. So, so part of this is a journey, and part of it is an inner journey to discover ourselves, and not only discover the parts that's, bad news in a sense, but we also discover tremendous capacity for beauty and power and some people call it a spiritual state, spiritual capacities that unfold in this process. We also had a journey in discovering aspects of our world around us, because we learn to pay more careful attention to the world, and the quality of your relationships to others and to the world, to your work, will increase if you have this good capacity to be present. So hopefully that wasn't too complicated. It's supposed to be simple. We'll do it again. So relaxation is an important thing. And however, if you're sleepy and tired, if you relax too much, then it's not useful for meditation. People who think that relaxing is the be-all and end-all of meditation will just slump in their couch, and just sprawl out and take out the deck chair and lay down and just kind of think, meditate, supposed to relax really deeply, I might as well do it while I'm getting a tan. just lay there and whatever, and just fall asleep, on the couch or something. We want also to have a certain degree, we want to balance relaxation with alertness, with a certain kind of healthy vitality that's there as well. And it's the balance of relaxation and vitality, of energy, that allows mindfulness to do its good work. So one of the things we do, we recommend for meditation practice, is to take a posture that somehow can bring together alertness and relaxation. Some years ago I read a study of the postures that human beings can be in that allows the musculature to relax the most deeply. And the two postures that allowed for the deepest relaxation was laying down flat on your back and sitting upright cross-legged like this. Isn't that interesting? You can relax more deeply this way than you can if you're sitting in a chair. And there's something about even using a backrest in a chair, which intuitively it seems like, well, I'm relaxing. And, in some ways it's true. You're not using as many muscles that you often do. But if you can learn to sit in a balanced way, in an aligned way, upright, and not use the backrest, it allows for some deeper and deeper relaxation that can't happen if you're leaning against something. So it doesn't mean you have to sit cross-legged, but it's good to find a posture that's really well and aligned and not succumb to old habits of just kind of always kind of leaning and being supported, because maybe you're shortchanging yourself, your capacity to relax really deeply. So I want to give a few points about meditation posture, talk about a little bit. And I'll talk about meditation posture for sitting on the floor and for sitting on the chair. But some of you on the chair might at some point would like to try sitting on the floor and experiment with it. The classic association of Buddhist meditation is like the Buddha sitting cross-legged on the ground. And part of the reason for this is that the tripod effect of the wide knees and the butt creates a stable base. And so that stable kind of foundation makes it easier for the torso to be held upright. It's very balanced. It's more balanced than sitting in a chair. And also it lowers the center of gravity, your center of gravity is kind of down in your lower belly, and it kind of feels really good to be kind of down and low that way. It feels more balanced. It's not required to sit this way by any means. So many people who meditate in a chair quite successfully. But it has some advantages sitting cross-legged. In sitting this way on the floor, I don't recommend you actually sit cross-legged. Cross-legged means with the legs cross each other. And so like this here, if you can see, those you can see, is called half lotus. And that's where one leg is up on top of the other. Full lotus is when both legs are up on top of each other. You know, the feet are on the opposite thighs. It's a nice way of sitting. It has some benefits. However, most people aren't flexible enough to do that without a lot of pain. Now, you can do it, but you should sit a little bit. You should sit a little bit higher. You should sit on something. Sit on your sweater. You'll see in a minute. But what I recommend is you sit what's called, in the West sometimes you call it Taylor fashion, one foot in front of the other, or I've also heard it called Burmese fashion. So the legs are nothing's crossed, one's in front of the other, like this. And that puts the least amount of torque on the knees and the ankles, and so it tends to be more comfortable. Then we recommend that you sit on a cushion, you elevate yourself. And how much elevation you have need is a lot. It depends a lot on how open your hips are. The more open your hips are, the lower you want to sit. The more tight you are, the higher you want to sit. Some people actually get two cushions and build up a lot of height. And what that does, it makes the higher the cushion, having some height, it makes it easier for the knees to come down, and so the knees to really provide a good foundation and support, and so they're not up in the air a little bit, or a lot. It also, by elevating a little bit off the floor, it allows for your lower spine to have a little bit of a curvature. A naturally straight back will have a natural curvature in the lower part of the spine. And for meditation posture, you want to ever so slightly accentuate that. So there's a little bit of feeling of strength, or kind of strength, I guess, the lower part of the spine. And that actually makes it easier for keep the rest of the spine upright, if you have that. A little bit here. So if you sit too low, sometimes the back flattens out, or it actually pushes out in the back, and that puts a big strain over time. If you're overarched, then maybe you want to sit lower to kind of make it a little bit easier. So you want to figure out some way to have sit so you can have a good aligned spine. That's the aim. If you're sitting on a chair, the recommendation is that you don't cross your legs there, but you have your legs parallel to each other. And both feet, the soles of the feet planted on the floor, on the ground. And if you are short, then you want to maybe put something underneath your feet so they can feel well supported. If you're tall, then we want to be careful. You don't want to have your knees higher than your hips. Because of the higher hips, it pushes out the lower part of the back and kind of eventually puts a strain there. So for tall people, maybe you want to put a cushion on your seat so you're elevated. And ideally, your knees are either slightly lower than the hips or the same height as the hips. So the classic instructions to have your legs parallel to each other when you're sitting on a chair, though some people like to have them spread out to the side so you feel this wider support and base. And then there's a trick, a meditation posture trick. And you can do it both in the chair and on the floor. So you take your hands on either side of your hips, and you either on the side of the chair or on the floor, and you push yourself up, almost off the chair or the cushion. And when you push yourself up with your hands, you let your chest come up out a little bit. And when your chest is out, your shoulders come back a little bit, and your shoulders back a little bit, you let go of your arms and let your shoulders roll back a little bit. And if you do that, you probably find you're a little more open feeling here. Your shoulders a little bit back a little bit, which makes them easier actually to relax. There's more room for them to relax deeply if they're a little bit back than if they're rolled forward. And probably you feel a little bit more alert in your spine, a little more upright in your spine, especially maybe in the mid-spine as you sit there. So it's a very simple thing to do, and some people find that helpful to get a little bit more aligned and upright. We can do anything you want with your hands. With both hands are doing the same thing. So I usually sit with my hands palms down on my thighs. The classic meditation posture in Buddhism is to have one hand on top of the other with the thumbs touching in front of you, like this, in front of your belly, like this. Whatever way you want. If you have your hands together, some people just clasp their hands together in front of them, and you have them down, sitting this tailor fashion, and you have your hands down on your ankles, then some people, it tends to pull their shoulders forward and put a strain in the shoulders and the back of their neck. And some people find it helpful then, if you feel that kind of being pulled forward, is to get a sweater or a pillow or something and put it on your feet so you can keep your hands higher up so you don't get pulled forward so much. If you have your hands too far forward on your thighs, it can also pull you forward. So some people find it helpful to pull their hands back up the thigh so that the elbows are kind of right up against the side of the rib cage here, and, you know, not in front. And then we do the obvious thing with the head is the head's supposed to be squarely on top of the shoulders. You wouldn't think you have to say that, but it's amazing what heads will do. And, you know, so heads will turn to one side, they'll fall over, chins will go up like this, and, you know, many things will happen with the head. And but if the head is not squarely on the shoulders, which means that the ears are lined up with the shoulders, then these muscles in your spine have to work a lot harder to hold you up. You know, if I hold this bell, it's a little bit heavy bell, if I hold it out like this far from my body, it takes a lot of work and I'll get tired quickly. If I hold it close in, it's a lot easier, right? And so the same thing with your head. Your head weighs a lot. And if you're keeping your head, you know, as far away from the center of gravity, your muscles have to work a lot. And so if you lean forward a lot, it puts a strain. So the idea is to keep the head lined up. And so occasionally, if you have some feeling that maybe there's a strain, you can open your eyes in meditation and see, you know, which direction you're looking. Are you looking at the ceiling, down at your feet, to the side? Just, and then to make a correction so that you develop a more balanced position for your head. In our tradition, we sit with meditate with the eyes closed. And if it's equal to you or same for you, we recommend that's what you do. Some people have learned meditation elsewhere, like in the Zen tradition where they meditate with their eyes open. And it's fine to meditate with their eyes open. What we recommend then is you keep your eyes kind of half open, pointing down about 45 degrees, and have the kind of focus that you're kind of loose, open focus, like you're looking at a mountain far in the distance. But otherwise, you know, we keep our eyes closed. If you're sitting, especially if you're sitting cross-legged on the floor, or sitting on the floor, and you're not used to this, it's not uncommon for people's legs to fall asleep, especially in the first few weeks of meditation. It usually passes after a few weeks. It's just the circulation finds new routes or something. So just be patient with it. And if it doesn't hurt, you know, just it's okay. The important thing then is don't stand up quickly. Make sure your sensation is back before you put weight on your foot. You know, you can tap, massage your foot or something. If the sensation doesn't come back within a minute or two, if it takes, you know, 3 or 4 minutes for your sensation to come back, then it's not a circulation issue, then it's you've pinched a nerve. And it doesn't happen very often at all, but occasionally it's happened for meditators who, and so you never want to pinch a nerve. And so if that happens once, be very careful, never sit in that exact way again so you don't cause lasting damage. So that's kind of and a couple of the variations on posture is for sitting on the floor, one option is using a bench. And so Kathy there, she has a bench. Can you hold it up, the bench? And we have more at the end of the stage in the cubbyhole there, there's more. And so there's these benches. And what you do is you put it above your lower legs and you put your feet underneath that and you sit on top of it. And some people find that works really well. And it's a nice alternative to sitting cross-legged on the floor. Gets you low. Any questions about the posture? That makes sense? Or anything that you have, special issues, or anything you'd like to ask? What about laying down? Laying down, in Buddhism, there's four dignified postures for meditation. There's sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. And so it's possible to do meditation lying down, but we strongly recommend you only do it if there's a medical reason. Because, like, you have a really bad back or something, injury. Andrea Fellow, my other teacher, she has sciatic problems. So she does a lot of her meditation on her back. And she doesn't. It's better now, so she usually doesn't do it anymore now when she's teaching. But there was a time you'd see her up here, doing meditation lying down. So it can be done. The reason we don't recommend it, except if there's a real medical need or something, physical need, is that it's conducive to falling asleep. And I've had people fall asleep here. They lay down and they're snoring away. And we're happy for them. And the other is that it tends to reinforce usually bad habits or bad and unuseful attitudes for what meditation's about. And it often reinforces the idea of trying to just comfort oneself, just relax, and not really be present for our life. And the idea of sitting upright is meant to do a number of things. One is it's supposed to be a deeply relaxing posture, but also sitting upright means you sit upright in the middle of your life to face your life as it is, not to kind of avoid what's going on. And so there's something very powerful about just sitting up and being still, and whatever comes, you just sit there in a dignified way and experience it. You could have murderous rage, and it's fine in the maybe it's not fine outside, be careful what you do, but in meditation, when you meditate, it's fine to have it, as long as you sit still, upright, dignified, and learn how to be mindful and present for it. It's a powerful, beautiful thing. So that's our experience. So that's my comment. Any other questions or concerns? If it's clear enough, then I'd like us to do another meditation. But what we've been doing is sitting for almost an hour now, so if you'd like to stand for a minute and stretch and shake out and get ready, please, you do it. So, the process of being mindful, of paying attention, and doing it with some care and respect for what our lived life is, can begin in meditation by paying attention to our posture. It's not like after we've taken our posture we start being mindful, but it begins when we actually get ourselves into the posture and taking some care and getting into a nice posture. In the years that I was a Zen student, I noticed that the longer someone was a Zen practitioner, the longer it would take for them to get into their meditation posture. You know, they would kind of take their time, they knew all the little nuances and kinks of their body, and they would kind of like just get it, just right. So it's a mindfulness practice to pay attention. I think it's very respectful of the body to be careful and attentive and notice what it is, especially for people who are not in touch with their body. It's a process of learning how to be more attentive. So take a posture that's somehow expresses both the alertness and the capacity for relaxation. Take a meditation posture. I like to say it's usually take a posture that's a little bit more alert than you usually sit. Your spine is a little bit more alert. You might try that little trick I taught you. Lift up and then relax, let go. And then gently close your eyes. And as before, you might begin just checking in with yourself. How are you now? How are you in your body? How are you feeling? What are you thinking? Meditation has a lot to do with our lived life. The life we can actually know because we're living it currently. Thoughts of the future, the past, are kind of a virtual reality. They're often about not the lived life, but the imagined life. So here's where the lived life is. So we check in, feel, and notice. And one of the things you can notice is how you relate to what you feel here. Do you don't like it, you like it, you're for it, you're against it. You're happy that you're this way, you're unhappy you're this way. And then if possible, for the purposes of mindfulness, this meditation, you notice how you are, and you see if you can let go of your extra concerns, judgments, reactions to how it is right now. It's okay to be the way you are. And then it's helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And those long, deep breaths are partly a reminder to be here in your body, to be here and now. And then as you breathe out, a long exhale. See if you can relax some parts of your body that might be tense or held. Or maybe you can soften around any restlessness that you might feel. And then maybe perhaps you can soften your shoulders a little bit. Perhaps you can soften the muscles of your face. And perhaps you can soften your belly. Let your belly hang forward, settle down deeper into your pelvic cavity. And then let your attention notice how you're breathing. Let your breathing return to normal. And notice what parts of your body get activated as you breathe, what moves in your body, what sensations happen in your body as you breathe. If where you feel your breathing most prominently, or where it's most comfortable to feel how the body responds to breathing. Some people feel the movements of their belly. Some people the movement someplace in the chest. Some people, the sensations of the air going in and out through the nostrils. And let your, wherever it's prominent or easiest or most comfortable to experience the body breathing, bring your attention to that area to get more familiar with what it feels like there, what goes on there as you're breathing. Notice the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out, the rhythm of expanding and contracting, Notice how the rhythm of your inhalation and exhalation is felt in your body. And the way the body experiences movement, the breathing, expansion, contraction, the movement, is kind of a tactile experience, where the sensation of the air blowing across the opening of the nostrils or down the throat, wherever you feel the experience of breathing. You feel it kind of through the body's capacity for touch or tactile or sensing. And your breathing is always in the present moment. And if you begin tuning yourself to stay with the experience of breathing, you're training yourself to stay more and more in the present moment. And of course, the mind will wander off in thought. The training is that when you notice that, you gently, smilingly, begin again with your breathing. Bring your attention back to your breath. Your attention might go off into your breathing many, many times, go off into your thoughts many times. It's okay. No need to be upset. Just as soon as you notice that's the happening, come back to your breathing. And when you come back to your breathing, see if you can hang in there. Hang out with the body breathing, the rhythm, the sensations, the changing nature of what happens as you breathe in and breathing out. Some people find it helpful that when you breathe out, exhale, to remember to let go of your thinking then. Let go of whatever thoughts have crept in so that you let go at the exhale so you're there fresh to receive the next inhale. Now, if anything is happening to you as you're here that makes it difficult for you to be with your breathing, no need to be frustrated. Just recognize what that is. That's the practice. Notice what's happening now. And you can actually notice. Part of the noticing is to notice the difficulty, the challenge. If you're a lot of thinking or discomfort in your body, restlessness. In a simple way, acknowledge it. And then you can maybe come back to your breathing. And we'll continue here for another minute or so. In this next last minute, see if you can stay with every breath, every in-breath and out-breath, without missing any, in a relaxed way. And then to end session of meditation, it can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So there was, I had a yoga teacher many years ago who taught a very interesting, I thought, little technique for yoga. Said, if you're doing what's called a triangle pose, so for those of you who don't know, it's kind of like you keep your legs straight and then kind of like you bend over with your legs straight to have your hands touch the floor. One hand is supposed to touch the floor. So it's, you know, if you're tight, it's very hard to do. And so she said, you get yourself, back when they had these, you can still have them, a whole bunch of telephone books. And, you know, however many you needed so that your hand could be firmly down, you know, have them stacked on the floor and you bend over, legs straight, and you, you know, put your hand on the telephone book. So, and then you do it every day, and every day you tear away one telephone page. And if you do it every day, at some point you'll find your, and at the end of the telephone books, you'll come to an end, you'll have your hand down all the way on the floor. Each day is almost imperceptible, the difference, right? Because a telephone page is so thin. But it, over time, it builds, and you stretch and open up in imperceptible ways. So the same thing with meditation practice. If you do it regularly, you might feel it's very awkward at first. It's awkward physically. It's awkward mentally. It's awkward emotionally. It's, you know, it can be awkward every way. Sometimes. And but if you do it every day, it's kind of like every day you take away a telephone page, and telephone book page, and you'll see that over time you'll change. You'll change physically. Your body will actually change. From taking an upright, balanced posture, the best of your ability, as you do it, things will start opening up and changing and balancing out. Your emotional life will begin changing and balancing out in a nice way, and your mental life as well will slowly, again, imperceptibly, change. You get more concentrated. You have a greater ability to be mindful. You have greater capacity for calm and equanimity, and from a Buddhist point of view, you have greater capacity for wisdom, which is to be able to see deeply in a wise way into our life and what's going on. But it takes, you know, really helps. Any amount of meditation is good, but to really get the benefits of this slow way in which we're changed, it really takes time. And if you're the kind of person who looks for instant gratification, don't do meditation. This is really a very, very powerful practice that is really something you want to do slowly over time and develop the benefits. When the benefits get stronger and stronger, as your mind gets stronger, the benefits become better. So we use the breath as the posture, and then the breath. The breath is at the foundation of what we do. And the breath is always in the present moment. So, and it's a lot easier to have the mind focus on the present moment if it's focusing on something which is rhythmic, that's changing in a kind of rhythmic, kind of regular fashion. And so when you sit still, the one rhythmic kind of alternating sensation that's common, that's useful to be with, is the breathing. And so we feel that. And so it's, if you try to fixate your attention on a single point, generally people get stressed and tense. But if you focus your attention on something which has this like breathing, which is alternating, changing, in-breath, out-breath, it's actually helpful to develop the concentration, the ability to be in the present moment, and also helps us to relax. Also, breathing is very closely connected to all kinds of psychological, spiritual functioning that we have, inner functioning. And that, the breathing is kind of like a nexus, a meeting point of our body, our emotions, our mind, our spirituality. It all kind of comes and meets in the breathing. And as we begin being more mindful, attentive to the breathing, it's kind of like you make space, and mindfulness is kind of like making space for something. And as we make more space for our breathing, the breathing tends to become more relaxed, more open, and we get a lot of benefits from the attention to the breathing. It's very common for people to breathe deeply when they need to relax. And so focusing on the breath is a very calming thing to do for many people. So we begin there. If nothing else, is a training to be in the present moment. Inevitably, your mind's going to wander off. Some of you find that perhaps it was easier to do the breath meditation here where I was kind of talking you through it. It'll be harder when you're home. That's okay. We start where we're at. The mind wanders off. Without any frustration, hopefully, just start again. Start again. We say that it doesn't matter how many times your mind wanders off. It only matters how many times you come back. And in fact, coming back 10,000 times in an hour is an hour well spent. And one of the reasons for that is that every time you let go of your thought and come back, you're not giving in to the habit of that thinking that way. And we want to start breaking the force of habit of always being swept up in our thoughts and concerns. And which you start seeing very clearly how much that's the case when you do meditation. We do this, it's called insight meditation. So because we have insight, we're going to see what's going on in a deeper way. One of the first insights that new meditators will often have is that their mind is out of control. The mind has a mind of its own. And it's common to get frustrated or discouraged by that. But if you, now that you've heard, it's the first stage of insight. You can just congratulate yourself. Wow, I reached already the first day. I already got the first stage. Then make it a little easier for you. But what we say more seriously is that if you have a mind that's out of control, it's better to know it is than to have a mind that's out of control and not know it. And so, don't worry about it. It's good you see it. Oh, look at that. That's interesting. And you can actually get curious. What's this out-of-control mind like? How much energy is it there? Boy, I could, if they hooked me up, take care of all electricity problems the way that I'm running around. You feel all the energy that's there, or you feel the emotions that are there. You feel the tension, the pressure that might be there. You get curious. And a hallmark, a real kind of a characteristic of this kind of whole mindfulness approach of life is curiosity. Be curious. What is there? What's going on now? What's going on now? That's like the basic mindfulness question. What's happening now? And keep it really simple. We don't need analyzing and understanding all the ancient reasons why this is happening now, but we're training ourselves to be present in a very simple way. Oh, it's like this right now. And not have the mind run away, get caught up in analysis, get caught up in judgments. We're training just to be present here, right now, in the simplicity. It's meant to be a very simple practice. Just simple, be here. We use the breath to train ourselves to be here, to come back to the breath. And it's time really well spent to just come back to the breath, come back to the breath. And for this first week, that's what I encourage you to do. And hopefully, by coming back to your breath, coming back to the breath over and over again, you begin settling down a little bit, and then you're in a better position for next week, where we're going to talk about mindfulness of the body. Some of you, I think, were uncomfortable in your body, sitting here for this length of time. And so next week, we'll talk about what to do, besides just moving and adjusting, what you can do and how to bring mindfulness to the physical experience as you're meditating when that becomes a significant issue. Some of you deal with tiredness. It's late in the evening. You're tired. And it's difficult to do. There's a few things about tiredness I can mention now. One is that you can sit up straighter, focus on the energetic aspect of meditation rather than relaxing, because, you know, if you just relax, you fall asleep. You could open your eyes when you meditate, because it's less likely to fall asleep if your eyes are open, and meditate with your eyes open. You can also very quietly, if you're really sleepy, you can quietly stand. You're welcome to stand here. Just stand, and rather than sit when you meditate. And most people don't fall asleep if they're standing. The inner self-protective quality of the mind will make sure that you don't fall all that way. And so you tend to be more alert when standing meditation. Sometimes sleepiness in meditation is a sign that people don't get enough sleep. And they say that Americans are as a whole, are sleep deprived. And some of you might need sleep more than you need meditation. And then to add meditation on top of everything you're doing already is like, you know, too much. Some people, sleepiness in meditation is a sign of resistance. They're not trying to avoid something. If you see little babies, if you put the babies in an environment where they're overstimulated, like a lot of noise, they tend to fall asleep. It seems to be a kind of protective mechanism. And that protective mechanism continues into adulthood, where some people kind of shut off. You start seeing some people just start yawning when they don't want to really be there. And so it happens in meditation occasionally. And if that's the cause of why you're sleepy, our approach is to be very respectful of that. That the mind knows what it's doing, and you don't want to bring a sledgehammer, you know, to break through the resistance of the mind. You just want to recognize what's happening, notice what's up, the sleepiness, keep doing your practice. It's hard when you're sleepy, but just do your best you can. And the mind, the wisdom of the mind, it knows when you're ready to open up to what you're trying to avoid, when you let it in. So just take your time. So the recommendation is that you would meditate every day. If you're so inclined, I really encourage it. The classic way of meditating time of day in meditation circles is to do it early in the morning. Sometimes it's easier early in the morning because the day hasn't started with a big bang, or the day hasn't started and all the busyness of the day isn't kind of poured into your mind and made you restless. So often sit early in the morning. Some people will have to have their coffee first. Some people take a shower first. Whatever, but it's often nice to do early. But, you know, if it doesn't work for you to do it early in the morning, then do it sometime in the day where it makes sense to do it, given your life. Some people do it in the evening before going to bed. It's helpful. Meditation is helped by regularity. So if you it's helped by meditating more or less the same time every day. If you can't, that's okay. But if you do it regularly, every day at the same time, there's something about the mind, the body, that gets familiar with meditation during that time. And it becomes easier to get into it, easier and easier to get into it because of the regularity. Same thing about it's helpful to have this meditate the same place every day. Like if you meditate in your home, it's good to kind of have one place, that's your place, so you have associated with meditation when you go to that place. It's also helpful to, a little bit helpful, I think also, if your house is big enough, like a corner of your bedroom, that place in your bed, that corner of your house, is only associated with meditation. So that your mind isn't pulled into those things. Like, you know, you don't want to sit down and meditate right in front of your television. you know, or right in front of your refrigerator. You know, you have other associations. And so it's a little bit hard to get into it. So, you know, so if you can find, if you have a place to go where you can kind of be away from the usual things you get caught up in, it's helpful. A sheet of paper that's a handout has some different suggestion of how long you sit this first week, maybe 15 minutes, I think it says, or 20. And some people want to know, how do I time myself? Because what you don't want to do is be looking at your watch, you know, every 2 minutes, you know. And so a timer can work. And nowadays, for people who have smartphones, it's pretty easy. They usually have timers in them. And you said that you can actually download on your smartphone meditation timers, and that they make this really nice bell sounds at the end, you know, however long you want. On IMC's website, we have a meditation timer that you can download, I think, on your computer. I don't know if it goes for your iPhone or your smartphone. But some kind of timer works well. And if you don't want to get one for you don't have an iPhone or something, then what you can do is, if you have some ability to record, you can record 15 minutes of silence and then ring a bell and then turn on your little thing. So that's the basics. Get you started. If you have any questions, you're welcome to stay afterwards. I'll stay up here and answer any questions that you might have. The last thing I'd like to say is that if you miss a course, miss one of the classes, or if you'd like to hear it again, right now they're being recorded, and the recordings will go up onto our website. Our website is insightmeditationcenter.org, and there's a link to what's called Audio Dharma. It's also audiodharma.org. And I think there's flyers out there, brochures out there, pamphlets out there about IMC. You can pick one up. Or our newsletter is out there. You can get it. And that has information in there. Anyway, so on that Audio Dharma site, that audio site, all the recordings of what happens here are put up, including this introductory class in mindfulness meditation. So I don't know how quickly it'll be up, but we have previous courses up there. So, you know, if you miss a week, you could listen to the week you missed there. And the handouts are there next to the recording, so you can, you know, print out look at the handouts there if you want. So as I said, our newsletter is out there by the door as you go out if you want to pick one up. Also, there's, I don't know if they're run out now, so many of you, but we have lots more in the cabinets. There's a copy of my book called The Issue at Hand, and that has some essays that are pretty, also kind of talk about the basic meditation practice we do here. So you're welcome to take a book if you'd like as well. So thank you, and I wish you well on this wonderful and exciting adventure of paying attention to your life. Thank you.